This is Blurring the Lines with Adam Bell and Peter Nicolaitis, IT entrepreneurs. Adam and Peter take on the topics of technology, business, life, and the pursuit of happiness and blur them together in the 21st century.
Good afternoon, good morning, or good evening, and welcome to the Blurring the Lines episode 240. I missed the word podcast. Blurring the Lines podcast, episode 240. I am your host, Peter Nicolaitis, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Adam Bell.
How you doing, Peter?
I'm feeling pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm feeling good. I feel pretty healthy. How about you? You feel healthy enough to run 100 miles?
No, but I feel healthy enough to run 50 miles.
Well, half of 100, that's perfect.
There you go. So apologies, I'm coughing a little bit. It's cold up here in my on the third floor, and I don't know why, because it appears that all of my Ecobee recipes and formulas, et cetera, are just being ignored. And I have not been up here all day, but that said, it's supposed to be heating my third floor to, you know, a comfortable temperature, and it is not. So apologies while I look down at my phone and turn up the heat a little bit. Other than that, I'm feeling fine. Just a little cold. I think I might need to go. You know what? I'm going to grab. You keep talking for a moment while I grab a pair of socks because my feet are cold, and that's bad because I don't want to get sick the day before my big event.
Okay.
I can hear you, so you can talk to the listeners.
Well, and I don't know. I don't know if your feet get cold or you go outside in the cold that you really would get sick. I think that's an old wives' tale.
Could be, but I don't want to take the chance. Besides, it's a good idea. I mean, a good opportunity for me to put on these really soft, fluffy socks that I got as a Christmas present last year.
Nice.
Oh, it's better already.
Yeah, there's no reason to be cold.
Yep. Yeah, says the guy who lives in Tennessee. There we go. Now I'm getting dressed up Halloween appropriate here. So, yeah, well, as I just alluded to, my big race is tomorrow, and it's my longest run to date, 50 miles. Mm-hmm. And I have to get up at around 3 a.m. and be there no later than like 4:20 or so, I think they said. That's when I have to arrive, park, get registered, get my bib. And then the race starts bright and early at 5 o'clock, well before sunrise.
And remind us, when do you think you will be done?
Somewhere between 5 and 6 p.m. Eastern time, yes. Well after sunset. So if you follow me, I share my location on iOS with select friends. So if you follow me, you will see me running, circles around this park. But the plan is roughly 3-hour loops.
Okay.
So from 5 to 8 will be the first loop, 8 to 11, 11 to 2, 2 to 5-ish. Mm-hmm. Lots of opportunity for things to happen and affect that schedule.
Well, and are you
not bad, maybe good things might happen.
Yeah. Are you still planning on having the poles available for the last loop?
I will have them available. Yes. So I'm going to leave them. My plan is I have 4 water bottles and I filled them all up. They all have my, my preferred electrolytes, Element brand, which I don't seem to have a referral code. Otherwise, I would shove one right into the show notes.
I do.
Yeah, excellent. but the plan is to, well, actually, they sell them on Amazon, so I think we can use that.
Yeah.
Forgot all about that. So that's one option. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take one bottle with me per run. Because it's not going to be super hot. So I don't expect to be like sweating excessively like I would in the summertime. Mm-hmm. There will be an aid station at roughly the halfway point. So really, I only need enough water to get me through like an hour and a half. One bottle, you know, 17 to 20 ounces is probably fine for that purpose. Mm-hmm. So I'm leaving a full, you know, three full bottles at the starting point. So when I come back there, I can just, assuming my it's easier and faster to run to my bag, I'll just run and grab a bottle out of my bag as opposed to going to an aid station and refilling a water bottle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Save a little bit of time there. On the initial run, I'm going to probably wear like, you know, a small tight-fitting beanie cap and a waist belt with my waist light as well as a headlamp.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the first run, when I get back, I'll drop those, probably plug them in to recharge the batteries because they'll have been running for however long.
Right.
And then go run a couple more laps and then pick them up again on the last run and possibly pick up my poles. I'll probably pick up the poles regardless, but mm-hmm. whether or not I use them, I don't know. But it'll be nice to have them in, you know, along just in case.
Yeah.
So that's the overall strategy for tomorrow. I've got my nutrition planned out, taking my UCAN gels and a couple of bars with me. Got plenty of sunscreen, although I don't think I'll need as much as I have in the, you know, the past. Spare set of shoes, clothing, you know, a change of socks if I need mm-hmm. them for some reason, extra jacket, two sets of gloves, etc. So, you know, a couple of hats. So if they start getting sweaty and cold and yucky, I can swap them out, put a fresh one on.
There you go.
A couple extra gaiters. My Garmin is sitting on the charger. It'll be fully charged. Just for kicks, I'm going to recharge after I wake up first thing in the morning. I'll recharge my Apple Watch and I'll bring that as a secondary just in case mm-hmm. anything goes terribly wrong. And I've got a battery for my phone so that, you know, if I'm using that for music or whatever, the battery's getting a little low, I can just grab a spare battery charger on top of that. So I think I got everything pretty much covered. So,
well, and where do you get to set your bag? I mean, is it secured or?
It's a standard practice at races where you can do a drop bag area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can make like your own little aid station. I guess some people even set up their own tents if they have people like, you know, serious people crewing for them.
Mm-hmm.
By serious people, I mean, like the person who holds the world record for this specific race is easily twice as fast as I will be. I did 50 miles in just over 6 hours.
Wow.
I'm like, wow, indeed. Oof. Yeah, that's impressive.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's exciting.
Tis indeed. So, and slightly nerve-wracking.
Well, tomorrow I will be in Knoxville for the UT Oklahoma game. So,
all right. So there you go.
Much less physical exertion than you're about ready to do.
On your part.
Yeah. I'm gonna walk.
How many people do you think are attending that game?
About 106,000.
Yeah, that's serious crowd.
Yeah,
that's more than like Gillette Stadium, I believe, you know, where the Patriots play.
Yeah, it's bigger than more than one college stadium are bigger than the Pros Stadium. I mean, it's bigger than the Titans Stadium. I think the Titans Stadium is only like 70,000. Yep. A lot of the other ones, they're right around there between 50 and 70,000 people in a professional stadium. So, yeah, it's a whole lot of people. And it's dark mode and Halloween. So everybody's wearing their black and orange rather than traditional white and orange. And
dark mode.
Like dark mode. Well, and so I don't have any, my warm jacket, and it's cold. It's cold here for here, and it'll mm-hmm. be cold at the game because it'll be windy and cold and hopefully not raining. But I don't have a black UT coat that's warm. I have an orange UT coat that's warm. So I'm wearing my warm coat.
Understood.
So, well, cool. Well, all right. Well, I'm excited to hear how successful you are.
Me too. To great success.
To great success.
Fingers crossed.
So you came to town last week. How was your Nashville visit?
My Nashville visit was fun. In addition to a couple of days of working, meeting with different vendors and service providers, attended a Nashville Predators game, which was also fun. Can't say that the Nashville people are what I would call good sports.
You know why? They're not really Nashville people who are going to the Predators games.
Well, there you go. Well, the fans in attendance and the folks queuing up the the prompts and the things, like queuing the fans what to say when there's a shot on goal or there's a goal.
Mm-hmm.
Queuing everyone to say, hey, you suck. I'm like, that's not well.
Whatever. Not very nice.
Teach their own.
So do you attend hockey games up north?
Boston? I've only been to a handful. I've been to a college game here at Northeastern, and I went to a couple of Clarkson games when I attended Clarkson University, and when I was a kid, I went to a couple of Norwich University games.
Okay, because we had a minor league team a long, long time ago called the Nashville Knights. And I remember we went and saw them, but the only professional hockey I've ever seen has been the Predators. So I don't know if the behavior in Nashville is normal for professional hockey. I kind of thought it was because we didn't have any hockey culture to bring to the table. You know, we didn't have 100 years of this is the way we've been doing it. So I'm assuming that what we do is fairly standard. You know, one of the things that we used to do, and I don't know how it started, was throwing catfish on the ice.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
So I think when like a bad call was made or something, they would throw the catfish on the ice. But finally they told them, one, you can't do that. And then they started doing things to strongly discourage the fans from doing that. And eventually they did, I believe. So you didn't see any catfish, so.
I did not catch that. Now, when we say catfish, you mean, I'm just assuming plain old, not like breaded and fried in a sandwich.
Oh, yeah. Dead catfish.
Okay. Okay. Well, bread and fried in a sandwich would be dead, too.
Yeah, but they bring them wrapped up in their pocket and, unwrap the catfish and throw it out on the ice.
Awesome.
So, all right. And then, of course, we got to get together, you got to visit the beer garden, which neither of us were drinking, but we went to the beer garden. Well, but you got phosphate for the first time.
I did. That was pretty tasty. That was a phosphate. What did I get? Like a phosphate lemonade concoction or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
From a place called The Pharmacy, which was which was pretty funny. So yeah.
So that was cool. Yeah, I'd been. Let's see, about 18 months since I seen you in person. I mean, last one I came up. My family came up to Boston. I think maybe it was fall break.
Yeah, I think it was fall. Sometime last year.
Yeah. So not quite 18, about a year.
Yep. There you go. So it was good seeing you again, catching up, even if we're not drinking alcohol, which was kind of funny, so seems to be kind of a recurring theme. Like, Scott and I started the Friends with Brews podcast, been a couple of years now anyway. And, we'd start with a different beer. Sometimes Scott would drink two beers, and then we'd gradually progress to decaffeinated coffee.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
Well, and I've actually got, we went to, there's a tea, did I talk about the tea plantation? I guess plantation is not the right word, a tea
farm
in South Carolina. Did I tell you?
I don't recall that, if you did.
So we went to a conference in South Carolina. It's a lavender conference. But one of the things that we did while we were there was visit a tea farm. And it is the second largest tea farm in the United States.
Okay.
And I did not know how much labor is involved in harvesting tea plants. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a huge labor endeavor. One of the largest producers in the world is in Kenya. And it's because, you know, the labor that they have is, you know, doing it really, really cheap. And they work from sun up to sundown picking tea leaves. And I'm like, wow, that's a lot of work.
A lot of farming and agriculture is a lot of work.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So be thankful.
But I bought some tea. So I've been, they have one tea called a marathon tea, which is supposed to have more, it's a black tea, which has more caffeine. And okay. Then I also bought a, I forget what they call it, but it's a nighttime tea. So no caffeine in it or very little caffeine.
Okay. So
they don't do the tea bags. I really like the tea bag for convenience.
Mm-hmm. Definitely is more convenient. You know, I think there's a lot of people who will tell you that you get a better quality tea if you let it do loose leaf tumble instead. Mm-hmm. I don't always do that, but every now and then I will, you know, I have a little, it's basically a cup shaped tea, strainer.
Yeah.
And so I'll rip open a tea bag and dump it into that cup and then pour, you know, place that little strainer cup into a tea cup, fill that with hot water.
Mm-hmm.
So, does it make a difference? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a, I bought a kit a long time ago for my wife. It was just kind of cool. It was a teapot and a box of tea, and it had like a strainer, but it's like a sphere that mm-hmm. opens in half, and you fill it up and then you close it, and then you still dip it in like a chain. It was on a chain. Mm-hmm. So you could still dip it and remove it.
Yep.
But I don't think I'd like the loose leaf, because I would not get to drink the bottom of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that, and there's certain types of like Greek coffee, for instance, you just pour the grounds right into the water.
Yeah.
And, you know, Turkish style also. So when you go to drink, you get to the last drop. Maybe you want to stop before then, though.
Yeah. You don't have to do bran muffins there. You just drink the coffee. Chew the end.
I was going to say, if you like coffee that you can chew, you're in good shape.
Oh, so cool. Well, so last weekend, we did, well, you and I only got to hang out one night. I would have liked to hung out more, but I had to prepare for the Goodlettsville Good Festival, Good Fest, where we had a lavender booth set up and sold lavender products and educated people on lavender. And it went really well. It was a nice day. The weather was perfect. We were under a big oak tree that still had its leaves. So it wasn't cold. It wasn't hot. It was just a real pleasant day. And it was a nice venue, but it was also the first one that we'd ever done.
Yep.
So I got to, you know, I had plans on how to take payment, you know. So like, okay, well, Goodlettsville is adjacent to Nashville, but typically, you know, these types of festivals, you never know. I mean, is it going to be like craft, like people that come with cash only, or are they going to have credit cards? And, you know, so I came prepared for cash, Venmo, Square, you know, Square with everything, you know, every credit card possible type thing. And, you know, very, it didn't surprise me, but I, you know, only like two transactions were cash. Mm-hmm. Everything else was mixed. I I was surprised though that some people use what's called Cash App, and and I'd never heard of Cash App until I got Square, and you know that was one of the payment options.
Yes.
So I didn't know about that. I knew, you know, I know Venmo.
Yeah, the Cash App is that one came to notoriety because apparently people it's like the preferred app for illicit transactions.
Illicit transactions.
Yes.
Oh,
so
why? I mean, what makes it good for that?
I guess they don't pay as much attention to tracking it. And, you know, so whatever illegal purposes you want to be using it for seems to be a good popular choice for that sort of thing.
All right. Well, I didn't know that.
Yep. There you go. So just make it, you know, keep that in mind when you're doing your, you know, your sales to your customers there. If they, oh yeah, we like the Cash App. You might like.
No, I do. Okay. Huh? Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I had to choose a platform to process, and the big platforms obviously are Square and why am I drawing a blank on it? Shopify. Those are the big, you know, point of sale systems, you know, that are used for that type of thing. Of course, there are specialties in point of sale for restaurants and bars, and I mean, it's Square and Spotify. Not Spotify, Shopify, both do those. But I was really pleased with the Square. You know, it includes an inventory system, which an inventory system is what is hard to get and integrate. And they have a pretty good one. I was actually pleased with that. I was able to easily put my inventory in there. They've got some plug-in apps that are pretty cool. And so I just took pictures of my inventory with the Square app and was able to drop it right into the point of sale system and be able to get it on the register and everything. So it was really easy to do, and it does the inventory tracking.
Yep.
So when we got done, we knew what it was. And, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about was, okay, how do I integrate my inventory tracking with my accounting system? And I thought about it, like, I don't need to do that. They don't need, I mean, transactions need to come from my point of sale and get into my accounting system, but it doesn't need to know what items were sold as long as I can get that information from my ERP.
Right.
And so I was like, okay. And it also gives me the freedom. If I switch ERPs, it's not that big a deal because my systems will keep working. Because I was kind of hung up, you know how we computer guys are. Well, will this work with that? Is there an API for that? And you know, I wanted to get Xero to work with Square, and it would, but then I realized I don't need it to. It does happen to integrate, but I don't need it to.
Right.
So, cool. And I did find, you know, of course you make some mistakes about your choices. I wanted this handheld scanner that I could, you know, just scan my items. I put a UPC code on my stuff. I beep, 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 you know, pick them all and then pay. It's fast. Yeah. Well, I didn't choose one of them. They have multiple versions, but one has the scanner and camera built in, which is the one I got. And then there's the other one. You see it everywhere you do a point of sale. It's got chip, it's got tap, and then it's got slide, and it's got a receipt printer all in one device.
Yep.
But I didn't choose it because it doesn't have a scanner, and I wanted to be able to bip, 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 scan.
Yep.
Well, you can put a scanner on that. You just use the USB port and a handheld scanner.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's one way to do it.
Yeah. So now I know, but you know, I went ahead, I had spent the money on the other one because the drawback of it, this irritated me, is I bought a portable Bluetooth print receipt, you know, a receipt printer, so that I could just boop, you know, print your receipt, you know, buy it, print your receipt right from my portable printer, wireless, give it to you.
Yep.
It doesn't have Bluetooth, so you can't do it. So I have to, if I want to print you a receipt, I can do it from my cell phone because my cell phone has Bluetooth and will print to the portable. But you know what? Not one person wanted a receipt.
Oh, I could see, like, if you're going to get somebody who wants a paper receipt at a, you know, at a flea market, some kind of like old school, you know, older generation, I keep all my papers, you know, I could see that being the place, but hey, that's good evidence. If you don't need it, then you don't need it.
Yeah. I mean, I still will bring it just so if somebody does want a receipt, I can print it. A lot of people get receipts from your credit card now that, as a text, because lots of people, what they were, you know, when they paid, Square knew who they were and immediately sent them a text message with their receipt.
Yep. Yep. I've seen that before too. And, you know, a couple of times I've done that and, you know, just paid with my credit card somewhere. And all of a sudden I get an email. I was like, wait, I didn't give them my tied to my credit card because it was tied to my Square account. I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
I gave you my information there. Okay.
Yeah, I gave it away. Well, so overall, I've been pleased with Square. So they've been good. Now, I had another one. You're welcome to throw some other thing. I was going to talk about the web hosting that I'm doing.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear about that.
So one of the things that I was interested in is the Amazon affiliate program. Yep. And you can have your website that integrates with the affiliate program. Well, the hosting company called Hostinger, they have a plugin that they've built their web platform around. And so it integrates with it. So I was like, oh, perfect. But
there's a but.
We'll come back to the but. So I built my website and I built it fast. It was based on AI. It asked me questions. I had an existing website because it wouldn't support the affiliate marketing plugin. Mm-hmm. So I said, here's my existing website, which I like, replicate it. And here's the colors, here's the, you know, all the words and everything, and only these pages. And it did it. And it took me 30 minutes to completely recreate my website. And it was better. It was better than what I had.
And this was built into Hostinger?
Yeah, built into Hostinger, this AI creation. Okay. And it worked out really well. And I got in there, I was like, okay, so now how do I turn on the Amazon affiliate plugin? Oh, it has to be WordPress. It's not WordPress.
They don't have it's just a WordPress plugin. That's the only option.
Yeah, it's only a WordPress plugin. But Hostinger has a process that you tell them, hey, convert my website to WordPress. And they do it for you. I mean, because you're buying it through them, hosting it through. So they did. They converted my whole site to Word from their native hosting to WordPress, but I lost some really cool stuff when I did that. If I want to do AI creation, I have to do it with Elementor,
yep,
the plugin for WordPress.
I've used that before.
Yeah.
I was not happy.
Well, it's really better than it was. I don't love it. I don't love Elementor, but it is better. But I am also, I remember how to do HTML. Mm-hmm. I remember how to do CSS somewhat, but I can't do it as well as somebody who's living it.
I wouldn't want to.
No, I wouldn't. Yeah. I didn't enjoy it. So I typically outsource that when I need somebody to really code something, I'll throw it on Fiverr and get somebody to do it. Yep. But so I got it converted to WordPress, and then I lost the ability that I had for form reads to throw it into a CRM, because Hostinger also has a CRM that's part of your hosting package.
Okay.
Which it's like Infusionsoft. You remember that?
I do.
And it's got some really cool basic automation. Now, you're not going to do campaigns like we were running, not big campaigns, but you can get automatic forms set up where somebody fills in the website, they automatically get an email saying, thanks for signing up for the newsletters, blah, blah, blah. They get authenticated, and then you can send them mail campaigns. And there's a limited number of mail campaigns that you can send from hosting. Okay. But I don't like their form for WordPress. I liked their form from the native app. So I'm going to use Elementor's form, which I like. I like the aesthetics of the form, and I like the control that I have over the form. And Elementor has their own CRM plugin. They have their own CRM, and I'm going to explore that.
Okay, that's cool. Now, my only experience with Elementor was I hired somebody to do a WordPress, like a conversion for something. And this was relatively early, and you know, I used Upwork.com or Odesk, whichever that was. And I guess I felt badly for the guy who did it, because I should have stuck to my guns and just said, no, this is unacceptable. But I made it in the description that, you know, you can't use any additional third-party plugins for WordPress, no extra themes or plugins.
Right.
And he built it on Elementor.
Yeah.
And I should have just said, sorry, dude, you know, just walked away. But I took pity on him. I was like, oh, okay, fine. Because I was also under a deadline and, you know, I had to get the site done. And then I was stuck maintaining Elementor for, you know, years, which was a pain in the ass.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. I don't like, I mean, you can really screw it up if you're not careful. If you like accidentally edit it, like you got to go to the page, and if you hit edit, if you just start working on it, you broke it.
Uh-huh. Exactly. And that's the thing. It's like, I'm okay with WordPress, but man, it's got a, I like to keep it as stock Apple stock WordPress default, you know, don't mess with it. Don't change it. Just leave it as few plugins as possible.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know since it's easy to install plugins, people just do. And I used to be the same way. I was like, oh, there's a plugin for this. Oh, there's a plugin for this.
Yeah.
And now I look at it like, oh, there's a security breach for this. Oh, there's a hack for that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's a paradigm shift.
There you go.
There you go. No, I'm the same way. I want as few plugins as possible, and I want to remove everything that's not active. If it's not active, I want it gone.
Turn it off. It's just something that can go wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, the update that scares me the most to do is to the theme.
I learned, we, Reed and I, when we were doing a lot of, you know, web design work a while ago, we learned the hard way that, you know, themes, it's not just like colors and some images.
Yeah.
You know, there's a ton that goes into WordPress themes, and I'm like, wow. Yeah. So it's not just pick and choose one that looks good. You got to really dive into the functionality and understand what's going into that thing.
Well, and we had a problem a few years ago with the Blurring the Lines website, where the theme that we had was expired, like it was done, and it wasn't compatible with the newer versions of WordPress. And so we had to upgrade. I had somebody rebuild the entire site.
Yeah.
I was like, just build it all over again.
Yeah.
What colors and what, make it blue. Just I need like three pages. Make it go.
Can you make it blue? We like blue. Yeah.
Blue works. All right. And then, you know, so I am a ham radio operator.
I did not remember that. I didn't know that you were.
Well, it's one of my, it's one of my hobbies that, you know, I kind of thought I would do more of it, but I really don't know. I don't even have an active radio right now, but I don't want to take my test over because it was kind of a hard test. And so I've passed it, and I really can't do what I want to do. And that's the, really low frequency, long range ham radio. I've got to take an additional test, and I just haven't been interested in the hobby to really go for it.
Right.
But I don't want to take the first test over. Well, the government's shut down and I can't renew my ham radio license. But they're saying that, you know, they won't, even if it expires during the shutdown, you're not going to be penalized and removed for that.
Yep.
But so I tried, I don't know, this summer I tried to renew my license. The government was open, and it's only $10 to renew my license. I could not figure out how to do it. I went to the site and it says do this, and you go there and it tells you to do that, and then you do that and it tells you to do this other thing, and then it takes you back in your whole loop. And I was like, okay, let me try it again later. Same result. I couldn't renew it. And I had gotten it. What prompted me was I had gotten a postcard from a guy. He's a ham radio guy, and he offers to do it for you for $80.
I'm like, take your test. Oh, just renew. Okay.
Just get it renewed. And I said, well, I'm not paying this dude $80 for a $10 thing. I mean, he was transparent about it. He said, it only costs $10 for you to do it yourself. And I'm charging. So it wasn't like a domain registrar in the mail where they're trying to screw you over, you know, based on your ignorance. Right.
He's telling you what you're paying. Yeah.
Yeah. He was telling you, you're paying me so that you don't have to deal with this hassle. I paid him $80, but of course it won't get processed until the government starts back up. With your ham radio license, it's good for 10 years. And then you have a 2-year, period of time where there's no penalty if you don't renew. I mean, they won't cancel you. Mm-hmm. So mine actually expired in June of 24. I thought it didn't expire until this summer, but I'm actually expired by a year and going on 4 months. So I've got 8 months to get it renewed before they kill my license altogether. And I'm hoping the government isn't shut down that long.
I heard someone say yesterday, you know, like when and if the government shut down. And so I was just like, oh, I hadn't heard anybody say if.
Yeah. Well, so there's that. So we talked about the run tomorrow. You want to talk about upcoming travel?
Yeah. So you and I had talked, I had mentioned, you know, my plans to maybe take another 2-3 week jaunt somewhere to the end, you know, for the end of the year. And, you know, I was using Travel Agent GPT to give me some ideas. I was thinking going back to Europe again for a little bit, but also I was thinking as it gets colder that someplace a little south might be fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about was, I thought it was kind of funny that ChatGPT thought that, you should check out, you know, Medellin, Colombia.
And Venezuela. Take a boat to Venezuela.
Venezuela, sure. Mexico City, you know, and I was like, is that safe? Right. I mean, showing my ignorance here. Right. I heard a lot of bad things about both of those places and stuff. You know, and he even said like off the bat, like, oh yeah, you know, Colombia has come a long way and overcome, you know, a lot of its stereotypes and yada, yada, but I'm still like, okay, I can't quite shake that one. Not just yet. So I'm not going to leap into that one. But my favorite band is touring. They were in Portland, Oregon last month, just as I got back from my trip to Berlin. And I thought that's going to be a little too much travel, coming back from Berlin, big work event, and then hop on a plane and fly across the country again, even though I would have gotten to hang with listener of the, and, you know, occasional guest of the show, Scott Wilsey. So I didn't do it. I was like, you know what, I'll just catch them in England, you know, in England or somewhere else in Europe, or when they come back here next year or something.
Right.
And then I was like, wonder where they are touring these days anyway. And I just went and I looked, and they're coming to Mexico City on the 16th. And there, it's a big concert. I forget who else is playing, but the headliners that weekend, it's a 3-day concert series, and it's multiple bands each day. So like, I think the Foo Fighters are headlining the first day, and I think it's Linkin Park the first on the Sunday, the day I'm going. Concert starts at like 2 p.m. or so, and 2 p.m. like Mexico time. But anyway, James, the band, has been my favorite since the late 90s, mid to late 90s. They're coming to Mexico City, and I was like, you know, what the heck? As my aunt has just designated me as her standby family member. So hopefully I can get myself a first class ticket down to Mexico, and hopefully a first class ticket back. So, yeah. But I did commit. I bought the tickets to the tune of 5,000 pesos.
Oh, okay.
And I got a hotel that's like right near the airport. So there's a little Marriott right next to the airport, and it's held. The venue is at the Formula One racetrack. That's where they also converted into an outdoor, you know, concert thing. I paid the more expensive. There were like three different levels. There's like general admission. There's one called Comfort, and then there was one called Plus. And then there was one exclusive one, which was like 14,000 pesos. And I was like, that's like 1,000 or 2,000 bucks. And I was like, I'm a fan, but I don't know what I'm getting for that, you know?
Yeah.
So I paid like, you know, a couple $100 for the ticket, which, you know, it's a lot, but I'm like, hey, I'm making a trip out of this. It's a destination, going to another, you know, another country. This will be fun. So I booked my hotel. I've got my tickets. Now I'm just waiting for my aunt to get back to me as to, you know, what it makes sense to do the flight. I'll probably end up buying a refundable, you know, regular old coach ticket just in case it doesn't come through. But hoping that, you know, like Wednesday morning, it's going to probably, by the time this episode drops, I believe I'll have come back. Mm-hmm. But flying out on a Wednesday, flying back on a Monday, and, you know, take a couple days off from work and, you know, go to have a concert down in Mexico. Well, there you go.
That'd be cool. Yeah. Well, you know, I like Mexico. I go there.
I've heard that.
At least once a year for quite a while.
Yep. So, you know, I figured like it's right between the airport and the Formula One racetrack. I didn't even look, but I'm assuming that that's probably an okay part of town. You know? I'll look into it.
Make good choices. You know, the three dudes who are, you know, look like they're up to no good and say, hey, I'll give you a ride. tell them no thank you.
I'm good.
I'm waiting for somebody, thank you.
I need the exercise. I'm walking, thank you.
All right, well, so we're getting close to the end, and you know, one of the things I thought about is we haven't done a nifty in a while, so I have a nifty. It's not, I mean, this, so the GL iNet router. I mean, you and Scott have both talked about them on the Friends with Brews podcast. Right. But I mean we've mentioned it here. So I got the Slate 7 because I want a portable router that I can take with me for travel. And I want my wife and my girls, if they're with us, that I can plug up to the Wi-Fi in whatever country I'm in, and they connect to the Wi-Fi to my wireless router, which has a secure VPN connection. to run back through my home or run through Tailscale's VPN network or Mulvad or whichever, however I want to route the traffic and secure that connection for all of my people. Because I'm okay, because I've got Tailscale on my iPad, on my phone, on my laptop, you know, so I'm protecting my endpoints. But I like the idea of my wife being able to just hop on the network no matter where we go. She doesn't have to memorize or give me the code for the Wi-Fi at this place. You know, I plug up the router, we're on. So yep. The new Slate 7, it supports Wi-Fi 7. And I don't know if I have any gear that even supports Wi-Fi 7. My laptop's 2 years old, so I don't think it supports 7. It does support 6. It does have the technology, and I wasn't aware of it, of the MLO, the multiple link output.
Oh, okay.
So that you can essentially get a much higher bandwidth, because it'll grab like two, say it'll grab the 5 gigahertz and then two, and it'll grab, you know, one of each of those and give you a higher bandwidth capability, which okay. I'm like, oh, that's cool.
That's cool.
So that's one of the new technologies of Wi-Fi 7. Yep. Of course, Wi-Fi 7, which is a faster frequency, you know, 5 gigahertz is faster, meaning the oscillation of the wave. So that means you have to be closer to the unit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Shorter range, more yeah. penetration, shorter range, higher bandwidth.
Mm-hmm. So if you're thinking better, you know, brand new Wi-Fi allows me to be further away and faster speeds. No.
Yeah. It'll go through. It's more like gamma rays, right? You know, they'll go through everything.
Yeah.
I did find out, though, I just looked in my MacBook Pro M4 Pro has Wi-Fi 6E. So
there you go.
And that's like things like a year old, less than a year old.
Yeah.
So I don't have Wi-Fi 7.
Yeah. So, but I was actually pleased with it. I generally browse my Wi-Fi network. I typically grab the 2.4 gigahertz because it gets the most penetration. And for what I'm doing, if I'm doing web browsing, 50 yeah. meg up and down is plenty fast.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's the thing, is like generally it's not going to be it can be if you've got a good, really good internet, you know, ISP and infrastructure behind it, sure, you know, you can benefit from it, but often 2.4 gigahertz is good enough.
So. Yeah. So I had it down because I still have the travel router down here at my office, and I was programming it, playing with it. And so I've got it sitting down here on the floor, and I'm upstairs on the other side of the house in my living room, and it's still giving me good coverage even on the 5 gigahertz, and even the MLO was lower. So, I mean, it only got like half the bars, but the 5 gigahertz and the 2.4 were still running great. I didn't realize that it didn't include the carrying case when I bought it. I thought it did because it showed the pictures of it with the description, but if you buy it from their website, it's a $13 add-on. I didn't realize that. So I am going to buy the case because I want it, you know, it's a travel router. I need the travel case to go with it. So I'm going to get that. I don't love the touchscreen front interface. It's kind of, you know, we're talking about paradigms. My paradigm is that you can't make settings changes if you're not logged into the admin portal. That's the way I feel like everything should be. Well, with that router, you can manage the touchscreen and you can do things. So
interesting.
You can turn a particular Wi-Fi off. You could turn off the 5 gigahertz or the MLO from the front screen. You can also look for open relays and attach to one of those by using the front of the screen. You can also power cycle the thing from the front of the screen, which is, I mean, that's going to be, if you've got it, you could unplug it. So really power cycling is not a thing. but it had a little bit more options that I felt that I wanted from a security device. But I just have to consider it's a travel device. I'm supposedly have it on my person. So while somebody can't go in and change my, they can't stop my tail scale from running. They can't stop, but they could turn my Wi-Fi off. But yeah, I suppose they could just unplug it too.
Yeah. You know? So, I mean, that's the thing is, as they say, if you have physical access to a system, then assume it's compromised.
Yes.
So, you know, yeah, I get it though. But you don't need to make it easier. I remember when Sophos enabled that, I don't remember how far back on the UTMs. I don't remember if they always did, but I remember like on the rack mount, you know, the 1U size Sophos UTM or Astaro UTM, ASGs.
Oh, wow.
You could do some things on those. Like you could, you know, browse through, and I think you could even set like up an interface and hard code a static IP address onto it and power off and stuff like that. I mean, I don't remember when that happened. Maybe that came through when it was like when it became Sophos. I don't remember, but it used to be it was just like display, right? You know, this internet is up or this interface is up. You know, hard drive is in good shape, et cetera, and stuff. And then it was like, oh, you can actually make changes on that. I know of one place where we have this deployed, and I do not want the guy on site playing with this. You know, we had the standard MSP agreement where, you know, thou shalt not tamper with the hardware that we provide. And of course, you get guys who, you know, IT guys who know better than you do, and they want to tamper with things, you know. There you go.
Yeah. Well, I need to wrap it up. I've got a meeting I got to hop into.
I need to go do my evening meditation and not get all jittery before tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, you're going to do well.
Thank you. Well, thank you. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that I will as well. So here we go.
All right. Well, listener, we want your feedback. If you'd like to discuss a particular topic, you can drop us a line at www.blurringthelinespodcast.com. We have a form. If you're a bot, you don't need to apply. And with that, we'll hit the big red button.
To contact either us or our guests, visit blurringthelinespodcast.com. If you like what you're hearing, do us a solid and subscribe to our podcast. And leave us a 5-star review in iTunes, Google Play Store, or wherever you found us.